Well, everybody, it is 6:49 a.m., and I am headed out to Toledo from Indiana, Toledo, Ohio. And I'm going to meet up with Daryl W4 and the Bad Cop, and we're going to do some virtual caches and some Earth caches today. The thing is, it's kind of raining right now, a little bit, so this ought to be... I just left my coffee at home, too, so I might want to go get that. But this ought to be interesting, a good, fun day. So I'm actually heading home again to get my coffee. So we'll see you guys later. Bye. All right, everybody. We are on the road now, or at least me. I'm still meeting up. I've got about a 2.5-hour drive to get to Toledo. So it should be fun. It's going to be about 2.5 hours for me. So, I'm headed off, and I stand corrected, not coffee, I've got my tea with me now, and, I'm on my way. I've got my inventory, I got my cash bag, which has, my GPS in it, my camera, which is really important since we're doing, virtual, so I can get all the information and things like that. I've got my MSI Wind netbook, that I've, told you that I've got, and, that'll be... So, you know, I can do all of the logging on it. Let's see what else. That's really about it. Got extra batteries, so I don't, you know, run out of batteries, since I have about a gazillion devices that have batteries now. So, that's about it. Thanks. Well, it's 8:18, and I'm 45 miles from where I'm supposed to meet the Bad Cop and Daryl W4. It has been raining like cats and dogs, almost literally, and as soon as I got into Ohio, it pretty much stopped the rain. So that was a good thing. It's still raining, definitely, don't get me wrong, but it's definitely not like it was. I mean, like, I would stop and get a cache or two like this. Where before I passed a couple of rest area caches and I was not stopping because I would have been soaked had I got out and got them. So that's the update right now. It's 8:19 and we're supposed to meet at 10, so I'm a little early. That seems to happen. So we will talk to you all later.
Well, it's July the 11th and we're down in Toledo visiting with the Bad Cop, who joined us for a visit with his parents. And Andy, Dree, and I are all out doing a nice little virtual caching run today. Hope to hit 12 virtual caches, 2 Earth caches, and a webcam. So we're going to start with a webcam cache, but let's just go around the car real quick and see who's in the vehicle. I've got myself as the driver, obviously, and next to me is...
I'm Firefly 03, sitting in the sitting in the passenger side. Blah.
And I'm X-Bunk-X, sitting behind Daryl.
And I'm the Bad Cop, sitting directly behind Dree. I hope she's not afraid.
So right now we're actually heading to the first cache of the day, which is going to be a webcam cache. And now, Bad Cop, I think, has actually tried this a couple of times.
Yeah, the first time I tried it, I couldn't get anybody on a PC at another end to capture the image for me. And the next time I was out here, the webcam was down. So I hope the third time's the charm.
Well, we did test it out on the iPhone, and it does work, but we figured out that you have to do a copy, which is new to 3.0. Otherwise, if you do the save as and mail it from the Photos app, it actually resizes it, which disqualifies it. So we have tested it. We've come up with a good routine. So as long as the webcam works, which it did about 10 minutes ago, we should be good to go. So we'll talk to you after we hit this cache.
All right, we're back, and we hit a few caches so far. Daryl had a nice route planned out, but Daryl, why don't you tell us what happened for our route?
Well, let's start with the good news. So far, we hit that one webcam, which wasn't too much of a problem aside from a little bit of visibility issues because of the rain, but you managed to pull that one off without a hitch. Then we went on to hit 4 virtual caches. We're on our way now to an Earth cache. But, I kind of messed up and went to the last of this first group of caches first. And, just kind of got worse after that. So we've done a little bit of extra driving around, but we shouldn't be too bad. I'd say so far the best of these caches, though, was at Little Conservancy. nice grounds and stuff. Unfortunately, didn't have time to explore it, so maybe we'll come back and check it out.
Yeah, that was a decent one. I really liked the... seemed like they had a lot of flowers and areas like that.
Yeah, some nice trees. It was the 577 Foundation, which we're debating whether that's the number of trees they have or their street address.
Or if they moved to that street address because, you know, they wanted to.
Well, here's my thought. That is their street address, the 577. So I'm thinking that was their street address. Then they had to plant the additional trees to get to 577.
True.
So now we're on our way to an Earth cache. We're going to hit that one and probably a couple of more and be back to you guys then. Well, it's about 3:45. We've hit 13 caches so far. We have 3 more to do. And for those of you at home doing the math, yeah, that's not what we had planned on doing because we found a virtual cache that we missed, or rather, I missed. My best guess is it was starting at the same spot as another virtual cache. So one icon on top of the other in Road Trip, or maybe it just didn't even show up in Road Trip because the waypoint had a set of quotes in it, so who knows exactly what happened. Point being, we missed a virtual, so we have 13 virtuals we're hitting today. We've already completed 10. 2 Earth caches, 1 webcam cache. On what's actually turned out to be a pretty nice day, just a little bit humid. Now, that one cache was a little bit messy because it was a 5-stage virtual. And we got lucky because it was en route to a bunch of the other virtuals we were going to hit anyway. So it didn't really slow us down at all. Now, Andy, you were actually missing a bunch of caches from your GPS, though.
Daryl, that's right. I noticed that about 3 or 4 of the last couple that we did, I was actually missing from my GPS. And I figured out finally the reason on that was because I had created 2 separate databases in GSAC, one that had all of the caches for the area, the 500 caches, and one that was just the ones that we were planning to hit. Well, what had happened is when I created the ones we were planning to hit, I apparently moved the waypoint as opposed to copied it into another database. And when I put the waypoints onto the GPS, I used the full 500 one, which was now missing a few caches because I had moved them into the other database. So luckily, we worked out okay, though.
Well, we've been having fun regardless. We're a little bit behind schedule. Haven't had any food yet either, but I don't know about you guys. I'm not all that hungry, especially having the cookies tree baked for us last night.
Yeah, I had a little bit of fun with the culinary arts.
So we're just, you know, driving along now. We've got about 10 more minutes now before the next cache. Having a little fun with the Nuvi 260, though, and its voices. We've gone through a few voices now. A lot of them aren't too easy to hear, but I think so far my favorite has been that Taiwanese voice.
Yeah, I'd say that was probably my favorite one. She sounded pretty fun and kind of mad a couple times when we actually missed where we were supposed to turn. It sounded like she was shouting at us.
Well, that Korean one was especially bad that way.
Yeah.
So I tried to switch it just again now. So we've got like a Russian or Ukrainian voice. I can't even read the characters to know exactly what it is. And we'll see how angry this voice gets at us. All right, well, we'll continue on and be back with you guys. Don't have a whole lot of time now, so we'll come back and talk about our planning and some of the technology that we've got in the car after this next cache, because we got about a 50-minute drive or so at that point. Give us a little bit more time to talk. We'll see you then. Well, if you were lost, that makes more than one of us, because we have no idea what that was, but can't even tell you what the language is. It means something about turn right, though.
It does, and you know, Daryl, that's been one of the funniest things that we've done this today is the voices on your newbie there. It's made us laugh more than once.
Well, it just provides so much entertainment, and, you know, since we're going many, many miles, we've got 30.6 miles between caches right now, so, you know, we need a little bit of entertainment.
True. Not to mention that the icon that's driving us there on your Nuvi is the pizza.
Yeah, we have no arrow, we have a pizza slice.
Well, Daryl, we're still here in the town that we're in. What town is this we're in?
Well, this is Wasion, if I'm pronouncing that correct. And this is where they're going to be holding the next Geobash. So Midwest Geobash is going to be here in a week or so from now. And you, by the time you guys hear this recording, it will have been past tense. But it should be a good event, and none of us are going to attend this year. There's not one of us in this car. Now, Backup, I think you were mentioning that it's like just before you're leaving or just after?
Just one day after we're leaving. I looked online after I had already reserved the tickets and found that the Geobash was one day after I left.
Oh, that just figures.
Sure, that figures. That's pretty much my luck.
Yeah, it's, I think, one of the Murphy's Laws. As soon as you schedule something, something else that you wanted to do will be just outside that window. But, so yeah, we've got a little time to chat about how we did the planning and what we're using. So, basically, we'll talk about the planning, and as most of the listeners know, I've been on this kick lately to try to hit as many virtual caches as we could. And Toledo was one of those clusters that we hadn't yet hit, which we mentioned to the bad cop as he was coming in town to visit his parents, and decided, you know, hey, we're going to try to set up a caching trip for at least the three of us and see what we could find. Got in touch with Andy. He drove in from Indiana, and there was a pocket query that I've got running on a weekly basis, giving me all of those virtual caches that we haven't found within, I want to say it's like a 500-mile limit. That's, you know, the 500 closest caches, which, you know, is quite a few caches, none of them immediately by me. And then I just went through, found what looked like a good, more or less, loop of virtual caches to hit, planned that out, went and added in the Earth caches and webcam caches, and came up with 13 virtual caches, and then I left one out. So it was actually 12 originally that we were going to go for, and there turned out to be 13.
We'll go ahead and blame that on the software.
Yeah. I think what happened is when I found the 13 caches originally, I had it, and then when we went into road trip, it left it out. And this is one of the things I like to do, is drop my files into Google Earth. Because Google Earth, if you have icons stacked on each other, when you click on those icons, it spreads them out. So it makes it really easy to see what's in an area. So I kind of pre-visualize, if you will, the route. Then I actually go and put together the driving route in Road Trip. So when I put it in there, I think that's when we ended up losing that extra cash. But that's basically all we did to plan the route. I put together a little Google spreadsheet for all of us to share and work on with links, and it made it handy, and got to take a look at what we were going to do, you know, kind of plan it out before we even met each other for real.
Yeah, and I was pretty excited to see the camera cache too, because while I have one in the past that I owned, I've never hit one, so that was fun, and it was really interesting trying to hit it too, because we actually, in the past, you know, people have used things like call a friend, you know, wireless around the area. We went ahead and used Daryl's iPhone.
Yeah, that's one of the coolest things, is these webcam caches are a dying breed, because so many of these things are just not available anymore. You know, companies that had them like Outback or whatever for you to use have closed up shop, moved, whatever. And since you can't do new ones, they're just dying off when that happens. So it's nice to find one that's actually a Department of Transportation one, so you know that's not going to be going anywhere for a while. And Bad Cop actually tried for it twice, correct?
Two other times, yes.
And never had luck, just because of that problem with not getting someone there or the site being down, whatever. Having the iPhone there, confirming and just, you know, doing it right there was just so nice. And, you know, we got to sit around for a little bit afterward and veg out and confirm that everything went. Now, for the other ones, though, well, for all of them, really, we're just pretty much using Oregons. We have two Oregons. Bad Cop has a 200. Dree's using her 3. I've got the DeLorme PN40, which I finally found again. And Andy's using his 76 CSX. And you've got those loaded as POIs, correct?
I do. I decided to run it as a POI this time, just basically just so I could get a little bit more information and see the different icons.
And then Dree and I are busy on our iPhones. Dree's taking care of the logging and looking up the information through the geocaching app. And I'm taking care of not just sending the emails for all of these virtuals with all of the information, but also going and creating through Evernote, which I've mentioned on CRT, and I think I've brought it up a few times on this show. I like using that just to create some kind of log, and I'll put some usually extra information in there. In this case, I've snapped a bunch of photos and attached the notes there. So all of that stuff is on my iPhone and syncing through 3G, but Andy and I have both noticed a problem in the current version of the software, and I've had the problem now because we're flirting with AT&T service, going in and out. The last cache that we, actually two caches ago that we did, where we were eaten alive by mosquitoes on the trail.
I think I'm missing a limb now because of all of the mosquito bites.
Well, it might be there. Just drink some more water and it might rehydrate.
Yeah.
But I had no service, so every time I tried to get into my Evernote note that I had already created, it was crashing and unloading the app for me, so I couldn't go and finish up the notes. And problem, too, with it going with this live email logging method that we've got is when we're on those trails where we can't log the cache live on the website, we also can't send emails because most people don't provide their email address. So you have to log into geocaching.com and go in and do that whole, you know, send a message form, send it. And even over the Edge network, it's pretty slow. To give you an idea how bad it is, I did a quick DSL report speed test on the Edge service coming down. And I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but I want to say it was 86 kilobytes down and 7 kilobytes, or kilobits, sorry, kilobits, not bytes, up. So that's really, really slow. It makes old 14.4 modem look lightning fast.
Yeah, and how I'm also doubling the logs, at least for myself. I'm creating using Bishop's Power Notes on the Wind. I have the MSI Wind netbook with me. I'm using that to just kind of keep track. I've got GSAC running too, so I can see quickly what the cache is requiring. Since we are doing virtual caches, most of them are requiring us to find, you know, some information out. So I can use the GSAC to find that information, and then also using the Power Notes to create my logs.
And that gives us two logs, so that if one of us messes up something, we have a backup log. That's one of the things I always like doing when I'm caching with a group, because I've, on more occasions than I care to admit, logged the wrong cache accidentally. You know, it was especially bad when I was doing it through the WAP interface, because you're sitting there using that little, you know, what is it, 12 pins on it, or 12 buttons on a regular phone? Yeah, 12 keys. Trying to enter in a GC number, so all it takes is one little slip up and you're logging a cache in Germany or Australia.
Well, we even kind of did that this morning with the Evernote. We had logged the wrong cache there too. We went to the wrong cache.
Yeah, well, that that goes back to that original oops with going to the wrong cache. It was one character off and I punched in the wrong one on the newbie. Actually, I punched the wrong line on the screen to route to, so hey, we fixed it, but it did give us a little bit of a workout there.
Now with all the of this online talk of the logs, this brings us back to the goodness to have offline logs too, because again, say we were doing this last week on last Friday when the site was down, what would have we done had we did not have the live connection?
Well, that's a good point too, and both Dree and I, through our geocaching apps on the iPhones, before we left, saved our pocket queries into the units so that we do have that information right there. And the geocaching app can work without geocaching.com being up. What it will do is just save your logs until that server comes back online and can resubmit. So we might not be able to confirm our logs because there's no way to check what's in the device, but at least they're there to save. Now, Bad Cop, what are you doing for your logging?
I do everything through the Oregon 200. I log the find in the device, and simply then plug it into my computer and upload the finds file into geocaching.com, and then using the field notes to log all the caches.
And then are you putting any information in through the Oregon, or is it just pretty much mark it that you found it?
You know, normally on traditional caches, I just mark if I found it. If it needs maintenance, I'll write a note in the Oregon, but I find the Oregon's note-taking a little bit clunky. And I prefer just to either recall it from memory, or if I need to, I'll write it down. Another thing I've been doing is taking a lot of pictures, and what I will do is take those pictures and then organize them with my logs. Obviously, for virtual caches, a lot of it is, you know, dates or numbers or number of words, what have you. So I use the pictures for that information.
Yeah, now we also probably should mention that I've got my little Lumix with me. We've used that twice, I think, so far. But for the most part, we're just actually using the cameras in our phones.
Now, that brings up a good point, too, because the Evernote software for the iPhone will geotag your photos, correct?
Well, it geotags a whole note, which is really cool. Now, the iPhone itself actually geotags photos taken unless you have location services disabled. But whenever you create a new note in Evernote through its application on the iPhone, since it has that GPS, it actually logs the location with that note. It's part of their architecture for the notes. So it makes it kind of handy if you're going to go try set up kind of one of those virtual multi-caches. You can run around with just the iPhone, take your pictures, put in the notes that you'd want. You could kind of run around with just the iPhone, put in those notes that you want for each of those stages. And you don't have to really leave a waymark if you're not, you know, too concerned about the accuracy, because it's going to be marked right there with your note.
Well, and that brings up a good point, too, because I've got Evernote on my iPhone or my iPod Touch. And for me, I had been labeling the note name with the actual GC number. But in your case, you don't have to, because it actually geotags the thing. You can go back and look, you know, where you were at.
Yeah, I still do, because most of the time when I want to look those up, it's going to be from the computer at home or, you know, at work, whatever, when someone comes back to me and says, well, you didn't get your answers quite right. Or I have a friend that comes back and says, I'm not sure what I'm looking for here. Yeah, it just gives me a nice reference. So what I still do is the GC number with the name of the cache, so that either way I can do a quick search and find it.
I kind of feel like a backward stepchild here without an iPhone or iPod Touch with me. All I have is a cell phone that takes pictures.
Well, that's still real handy and gives you that information that you can refer back to quickly enough. And for the photos, you can do that on most of the digital cameras these days.
Definitely, definitely.
The downside, though, being if you have just a digital camera, you can't upload those to a web service of any kind or email them right away.
Not right away. No, but you can do it when you get back to your computer.
Which is what we're really actually doing anyway, because most of the time we're just emailing the photos to ourselves, because they have to be attached to the logs at geocaching.com, and you can't really do that from the phones anyway. So it's just as good to do it from the camera in most cases. You just gotta kind of, you know, make sure that you don't delete those accidentally.
Now, this also brings up a good memory, too, because all this technology that we're talking about, I remember back in the day when we were going paper, we print out each of the papers, and we'd have to take them with us, and then we would, especially on a long day like this, we'd have to wait till we got home, go to the site, and then go to each web page, log it, have to try to remember exactly what was going on, especially if you forgot to write, you know, take a pencil or pen and write it on the printed out page.
Yeah, now the question, though, is when you were doing those paper logs, how many caches were you even doing in a day?
Not very many. I mean, I think the most we did at one time was, I think, 13 with the paper.
Yeah, 11 caches in a day when we were going with paper would have been, you know, really unheard of for us. So it's almost to the point where I can safely say we would not be hitting anywhere near the number of caches we are if it were not for having the paperless.
I think one of the most interesting things about this trip, too, is, I mean, I've talked to you I talk to you almost every week. You know, every time we do a podcast, I'm talking with you. You're in Detroit, and I'm in, you know, Goshen, Indiana. And I, you know, we've met one time before, I think, now, and the Bad Cop is starting to do a segment on our show, and never met him before, and now we all come together in, you know, a different state and go for caching.
Yeah, and we're all constantly tweeting to each other and trading emails back and forth, so it's real nice to meet up face-to-face. It's, you know, there's no substitute for that.
No, definitely there's not.
Now, given that we're finally caching with each other for the first time, because, Andy, when we first met, you know, in person...
Yeah.
We didn't cache. We just
went to lunch at
Panera and, you know, chowed down and moved on.
Yeah.
So, having cached with each other now, is there anything that you've picked up from the way that any of us cache, including Bad Cop, that you're going to take home with you?
I definitely see the redundancy and how good it is to have the redundant, not only GPS units, but logging, too. Like you had mentioned, you know, Dree's logging them on her iPhone, and, you know, I'm logging them here, and the Bad Cop is logging his, too. The redundancy, I definitely would say, is good to have. It's also, I think, I definitely see the niceness of having a newbie on the dashboard just to do the navigating to the units.
Yeah, having that dedicated dash unit for nothing but routing you, you know, on the streets makes it so much easier, because, you know, we're sitting here in the car. You know, Dre can be logging. Andy's back there entering caches that he forgot to enter.
Hey, now.
Yeah, this does kind of bring up one of the best advantages, too, of caching as a group. You know, we had that Earth cache. I can't remember which one it was, but we had an Earth cache where we had to go to four different points, I think. And we entered in a couple of the points wrong and ended it up at the wrong side of the hill. Yeah, that's just one of those things.
But the thing is, if they would have listened to me in the very beginning, we would not have had any problems.
Yeah, I guess it's just us guys.
Typical male.
And my wife, Julie, would agree with that, too. She always tells me that, you know, don't go straight with the arrow. There's always a trail. There's always somewhere to go that you can follow. It must be a male thing.
Yeah, well, it's definitely at least a geocaching thing, because, you know, you just want to follow that arrow and, you know, the shortest route possible so you can get on to the next cache. But yeah, it does give us you know, that kind of redundancy. You know, we can bounce ideas off. And, you know, I've been out there where I just misread a number or, you know, something like that. It doesn't take much, and having the extra eyes really makes it nice. And when we were making these errors, we should mention we were going just on the DeLorme, which I had passed to Bad Cop so that he could play with it for a bit and kind of get a feel for it. Now, and that's a good point, too. What did you think of that unit?
You know, I love the screen. It's really bright and clear. I found the navigation, well, after coming off a touchscreen unit, going back to a unit with buttons is a little difficult. I loved my Legend, but it was the first GPS that I had that I actually did any geocaching with, so that developed that closeness. I find the PN40 is a nice unit. The size is pretty good. You know, once I figured out how to jump around it, it wasn't bad at all. Adding the waypoints in, being able to edit the original coordinates for the geocache to update those to make it the next waypoint, that was really nice.
Well, and I find it really handy, too, because you can actually add those waypoints in the field. And that's the one thing that the Oregon, the Colorado, and presumably the Dakota, we don't know because it hasn't shipped yet, but it seems like all of these Garmin units restrict you to just what's in that GPX file. So you don't have the option to change anything once you're in the field, including even add a geocache, which, you know, at events, how many times is it now that you get at least one or two new caches?
Well, on the Oregon, you do have the Waypoint Manager, which you can go in and quickly add a waypoint in.
Oh, absolutely, but...
And that's what I use.
Yeah, but the problem being with the adding the waypoint, for anyone who's using that for their logging, including yourself, that's not going to be in your field note file, so you have no way to upload that to GC when you're done.
Good point.
So it does provide some challenges when you're out in the field logging with just that Oregon, Colorado, and presumably the Dakota, it's probably not all that often that you'd run into it. You certainly could do it just, you know, even SMS yourself or send yourself a quick email from the field and jot it down on a piece of paper. But having that all in the one unit and being able to do it just in that one spot is really convenient.
So you're saying we need to carry around at least $1,000 of electronic gear to be an effective geocacher?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's just mandatory. And I'm sure if you talk to any of the manufacturers, they'll wholeheartedly agree.
No doubt.
And you have to have at least $100 of mobile phone service a month to support all of it.
Right. And don't forget you have to have at least $50 in batteries in your backpack.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. And the solar backpack is always a smart idea, but not mandatory.
Well, in Washington State, it rains too much for any sort of solar cell to be overly effective. But, yeah, I think that would be a good idea. So, you know, geocaching, yes, you can sign up for free, get a free account. But to be effective, we're talking several thousand dollars worth of equipment.
Yeah, well, you know, let's be honest. I think we all need a helicopter.
Oh, true.
You know, jetpacks would be great, but they're a little too short. Yeah. You know, you only have, I think it's like a 3-minute window on a jetpack. So that's just for the last little hop over the river or whatever.
You know, oh, you mean to that cache, the rock cache that I wanted to hit today?
Oh, man. Does anyone have the information on that cache handy? Because we should talk about that one. There's this really cool old train bridge in Rouge-Labouthe Park, was it? It's an old electric bridge for one of the electrified railways, carries electricity. The bridge is falling down and certainly doesn't look safe to cross. No way to even get toward it. But in the middle of that bridge was this cool rock just sitting there. And
and the GC number on that, in case anyone is wondering, is GC140TX.
Now, how tall do you think that rock is? I'm thinking it's at least 20, 30 feet tall.
Yeah, I was going to go 40.
At least, maybe even 40. And, I mean, the difficulty on the cache is 3. The terrain is a 4. So it's definitely, it would have been a good one to hit.
And it looks like you can wade out there. It's just going to be a little bit treacherous because it's, you know, running water. It looked like it had a good current. But there were people out there. Just fishing. No shoes even, just fishing out in the middle of this current. So we definitely could have walked to the cache if we had found an easy way down and gotten a little closer to it. And, you know, Andy, I was beginning to wonder if we were going to have to physically restrain you.
I really do like the difficult caches. And I kept, no matter where we go, we go to the next cache. And I'd be like, I think I can see that rock from here. You think I can get it? I think I get it. And the thing about it is, we saw it when we were doing the five-stage multi, or the three-stage multi, and multi-virtual, or Earth, whatever virtual one it was. And every point we go to, I'd see it, and I'd want to, like, look, we're actually closer to that rock now, Daryl. Can we go get it?
Well, and when we got the closest to the rock, we did find a trail, but the trail went the wrong way.
True.
And then you were, as I recall, contemplating how difficult it would be to get down the slope there and back up.
Yeah, and I mean, I really wanted to just go across the bridge and jump the rock to the bridge, but it probably wouldn't have been a smart idea. The bridge looked pretty not in the best condition.
Well, and don't forget that it probably was a good 20, 30 feet from the bridge to the plateau on that
True.
Rock. So
Jules probably would not have liked it had I come home with a broken leg.
No, and we would have probably given it a shot had it been for a little bit more time and having not found that extra cache that we missed, that multi-virtual that we had really no idea how it was going to fit in and how far it was going to set us back. You know, right now we're looking at 2 more caches on our trip. Our next cache is we're looking at 4:50 arrival time, and then we've got another, I want to say, like roughly hour or so before we can finish up. So, you know, as it is, we're still going to be about 6 o'clock, and you've got to make your trip home.
Yeah, and you know, the good thing though is that if I would have jumped and broke my legs, you do have the spot messenger with you.
This is true.
We would have known how to find me.
Yeah, and that's definitely one of those locations where you're going to need a little bit more than the local ambulance.
You mean that helicopter that you've got in the back of your car, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the fold-out helicopter like they had in One of the Bond movies. I can't remember which one. Little Nelly, though. So, yeah, we've got about 20 minutes before the next cache. I think I need some water, so I'm going to sign off, and we'll come back in a little while.
We'll talk to y'all later. Well, we've finished up our caches for today, and we're still all here. We still have everybody. We didn't lose anybody in the cache run. We're all still here, and we finished all of the caches we planned to hit. Now we're going to go get some dinner.
Yeah, we're going to another Toledo tradition, Tony Paco's. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a, we'll call it a hot dog place, made famous through MASH and Jamie Farr's mention of it on the series. So, really good food, though. I'm sure if any of you know it, you'll recognize it and love it. But we did some awesome caches, actually, since the last time we talked. The last virtual cache we hit was a school. Looks like it's been converted to a meeting house. But the one before that's the one that actually had us talking quite a bit. It was a cemetery, and the instructions were to go and find the only headstone in the cemetery that had a person's name on it. It's kind of obvious when you got there which one it was, but it was just a weird situation because all the headstones were numbers. That was it.
And so some of the questions that it brought up were, who is this lady, and why was her name the only one that was on the headstone? We kind of got to the point where we realized that the reasons that the headstones were just numbered is because it looked like there was like an infirmary nearby, so it may have been some of the residents of the infirmary, but we're still not sure who the lady was or why she was the only one named.
Yeah, exactly what her special business in life was that gave her the extra notice in death, we don't know, but from the sign on site, it does mention that that cemetery was tied to the county home. So it's all people who have passed while under the care of the county. So unfortunately, these are probably people who simply didn't have a loved one to give them the proper burial and care in life and death. So kind of a sad situation.
Well, and another thing that we found kind of interesting, too, is they had mentioned that a while back the headstones were all taken out for easier maintenance of the actual cemetery. And then through a bunch of different friends and things like that, they cleaned them up and put them back in.
Yeah, that is a kind of disturbing turn. In many cases, we've heard of these tombstones being used as steps. And you know, that just, even though they're just numbered, yeah, it kind of doesn't sit right for me.
Yeah, that's not it. To me, if it's a memory of somebody, I mean, everyone is somebody, has, you know, a mom, a dad, and they're somebody, and so that they, to me, it's not good to have them, their headstones used as steps.
No, well, one of the other disturbing things was that there had not been a central location for records as to what number represented what person, and they've been working to consolidate those records, which I'm very glad to hear, but that just sounds a little weird and very much like one of those 19th century dilemmas of data management.
Yeah, no kidding.
So very, very happy to hear that we don't have to deal with that kind of stuff anymore. You know, think about how much for granted we take just the ability to have data in multiple locations now.
No kidding, like Evernote.
Evernote and GC, you know, you don't have to go to the library and look up your cache location.
No.
And, well, we should probably mention, too, that we switched now to the Japanese voice on the Nuvi, and she's nice and polite to us.
Yeah, it's a much more calming voice.
Yeah, we kind of want to just drive around a little bit more because, you know, she's not going to kill us for making a wrong turn.
No, but I would say I'm hungry. Let's not just drive around a little bit.
I think our tour guide here wants some food, too, so sounds good to me. We'll talk to you guys a little bit more after dinner.
See you later, guys.
Well, we're finally out of dinner and sitting around on the deck of the bad cop's parents' house, enjoying the lovely chairs and what's turned out to be really a nice afternoon.
It has. It's really been nice.
And we've partaken in one of the fine Toledo experiences, Tony Paco's. And Andy, what do you think of Tony Paco's?
I think Tony Paco's is X-Punk X approved, definitely.
Yeah, and if anyone wants to check that out, we'll post a link to the twit reel. We got a fun video. You know, just it's been one of those kind of days. So I think everyone had a blast.
Yeah. I'm totally full, and it's going to be a hard 2.5 hour drive home because I'm full.
Yeah, Tony Paco's is kind of a punishment for your stomach because you just keep eating until every ounce is gone. It's just one of those kind of places.
And it doesn't look like it's that much when they pull it out and they bring it out, and it just doesn't look like it's that much food. But then you eat it and you're like, oh man, I'm full.
But you know, you have to admit, Tony Paco's is the premier hot dog. I have to say, in America.
I would agree.
Yeah, it's by far the best that I've had. And, you know, not that I'm a fine hot dog connoisseur, but definitely. You know, and it's just one of those Toledo experiences. Every time I'm down here, I just want to stop there. So now you've had a chance to experience the original Tony Paco's, not one of their
chain,
you know, little chain ones. It's the original Tony Paco's. It's like the least corporate restaurant I think I've been to in over a decade.
Yeah, I definitely, if anyone's ever in Toledo, check them out. It's definitely something that I never knew before, but now I gotta come back.
So we definitely got another Toledo trip, I think, coming, just so that Andy can
definitely
score some more Tony Paco's. And we hit no physical caches today.
It's
all virtuals and all the webcams and earth caches. And I had a blast. Yeah, it's more about finding this stuff, and we found some really great locations.
Without a doubt. I mean, it just feels wrong to step out of the car and not have a pen in your hand to go sign a log. But it was a lot of fun. There were places in Ohio I never knew existed, and that's the whole idea behind the virtuals, is to go somewhere where you don't know and explore and learn.
Yeah, I would definitely say that the virtuals and earth caches are especially cool because you can learn a lot of history. And that's what I think that is missing now, that they took them and moved them over to waypoint or way marking, because it's not the same thing as it was then, you know, with the virtuals.
Yeah, well, a lot of that goes back to it's not that easy to discover the waypoints that you're going to want to hit. And we hit the museum with that cemetery and the infirmary. That's probably not one we would have found through waymarking, because we probably would have skipped over the museum category, expecting it to not necessarily be something that we wanted to hit on a day like today.
True. And just, I mean, in general, the information, especially with the earth caches that we hit, learning all the different, the way that the rocks, that one rock that had the bowl type shape around it,
yeah,
that was really cool.
Alvar. Do you remember the name of that one? Okay. Yeah, we hit that one Alvar, which I've heard the term before. I think I've even done a few up by me, but none of them were quite the same as this one, and it was spectacular. You know, I really wish I had come out with my big camera today and just grabbed some pictures. Instead, we're sitting there with our camera phones. But it was the Maumee River Alvar. You know, the second one was that... the second one that we hit, though, was that... Bowling Green fault cache. You know, you don't really expect a fault out here, but I didn't expect to see that much evidence of a fault, even if we did find one. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, and that's the one where we also learned that us men should probably listen to the women.
Most definitely.
Yeah, we did get into a little bit of navigational trouble. Hey, but it wasn't too bad. It was fun, even though we were, you know, getting hot and sticky out there. But just in general, it was nice not to have the burden of dealing with a pen and, you know, swag. And
although I have to admit, though, I had already had my PowerNote set up to do a default log, and in the default log I said took nothing, left nothing, signed log, and there's no log to sign, so I'll have to go back and edit those before I post them.
We should come up with a new acronym: took nothing, left nothing, signed nothing.
True.
There you go.
I like that one. Maybe just, you know, looked for a log to sign, but didn't find anything.
I always loved our parking lots when people took nothing, left canoe, in a nano cache.
Yeah, it's a little bit challenging, but, you know, maybe with miniaturization, you know, who knows? But yeah, in all, I think we had a, you know, amazing day out. You know, it's it really, you know, started out nasty. We had some bad storms. Andy, you drove through
stuff. Yeah, I had my windshield wipers on high, had my flashers on. I could barely see. You know, I was almost looking for a text from you saying, are you sure you still want to do this today? Because it was definitely pretty rainy, and I knew that if we were going to go out caching, we were going to be real wet.
Well, and I loaded up the car this morning. It was nice and overcast, still fairly bright. By the time I came back in from the second trip and last trip down to the car to load up the gear, it was looking pretty nasty. Before we left, it was storming. And checked the weather radar, and I'm looking at this nice band that was just kind of, you know, coming in from the southwest and going up to the northeast. And I'm thinking, poor Andy, he's got to drive in this stuff, and it's just going to hang over his car the whole trip.
It did pretty much. I stopped and got McDonald's for breakfast, and it was raining pretty good then, but not, you know, where I couldn't see. And then as soon as I got on the toll road, it was torrential downpour.
And I'm sure it didn't let up because we saw that storm system.
No, it didn't. And I crossed into Ohio, and as soon as I crossed in and, you know, got out, it was starting to slow down enough that I was like, okay, we could actually do this. You know, it's raining still, but it's not like downpouring. And by the time we got here, soon after we got here, it started to sun up.
Yeah, and you know, we had the webcam cache where we had some rain. We were still in our rain gear, and by the time we came out of, you know, we went into the fast food joint to, you know, get some more coffee and check on stuff. And by the time we came out, it was fairly nice.
Yeah,
I considered calling and both of you and saying, you know, you want to delay it an hour or two, just, you know, to get out of the heavy rains, but it worked out perfectly.
Yeah, but it is, you know, almost 8 o'clock now after a full day of caching and, yeah, taking a nice leisurely dinner. And, yeah, you got a 2.5-hour drive?
I do.
So, yeah, you know, he's going to want to get back. And, you know, that's a problem with scheduling. You know, we schedule this thing out for roughly a 6-hour drive, allowing about 10 minutes at a cache, which we knew was going to be, you know, tight. Hopeful. But that was going to be probably our best, you know, guess, because some of the caches literally were just drive-ups. You know, drive up, take a look at the plaque, jot down the information, and go on. But other ones like that...
the fault one.
Yeah, the Bowling Green fault took forever. We had that multi-virtual that we had to do, the 5 stages. And then, you know, that makes up for it and then takes up more time. So I think we probably spent a good 8 hours, even though we planned for 6.
We should mention, too, that multi-virtual, the stages, for the most part, were at least a couple miles apart, for the most part. These are the 5 stages, were a couple miles apart. So
we
not
had
like
at least a 4-mile drive, I think, between each of those stages.
True.
Even if the stages were closer, we had to go down a couple of miles, run over the bridge, and come back. So, yeah, it was a good long drive to get from point to point. Fortunately, it did tie into the rest of the caches we were hitting.
Yeah, then that was the good thing, that when we did find out that we missed one in the scheduling, that we started looking at each of the stages and then figuring out what the next one we had already scheduled, and they were already in line with the ones we had scheduled, so that was nice.
Well, and that's a good point to bring up to anyone who's doing these. If you do run into one of these caches that's multiple stages where you're going to be driving and you wanted to hit other caches along the way, make sure to check that you're not going to pass by one, because it's worth doing them out of order. Otherwise, you're going to be driving all over the country trying to find the stages of a cache.
Well, and I think, too, at least on that one, all of the additional stages were listed in the cache page, correct?
Yeah, that one wasn't any puzzle stuff. And it would have been one of those things that, had I noticed it, I would have been going in and putting in the waypoints and planning those into our trip. But, again, it's one of those ones that just, oops, we missed it. And it's just like when you go out for that incidental day of caching, where you just don't know exactly what you're going to hit or where stuff is. Yeah, and we've had a number of those where it's like, we want to hit this specific cache for whatever reason and this specific cache, and anything we find in between, you know, we're going to find. And it's really easy to skip over one of those if you get into a cool virtual or, you know, multi or what puzzle cache where you're, you know, driving all over, you know, especially if you get distracted because it's interesting enough. Yeah, which does happen, unfortunately. So one of these days, we're going to all have to get back together again.
And do this again.
Do another one. We're all out of virtuals here, though.
We'll have to go out somewhere else.
This time, I'm navigating.
Maybe yeah, but you don't like to be the navigator very much.
Yeah, well, that's true, but at least I know where I'm going.
Well, how about you be navigator off-road, and we'll let the newbie handle on-road.
Okay, that sounds like a plan.
Maybe we'll have to all go up to Washington and hang out there and cache with the bad cop up there.
Well, you know, I'm really, really, really hoping to get out to Geo Woodstock 8. That just is going to be...
Yeah, I would like to make it out there, too. It's going to be...
It's going to be like the Mecca event. You know?
Yeah, no kidding.
You've got Groundspeak's headquarters. I'm sure they're going to be doing tours all week. Yeah, I don't think they can fit that many people through the doors otherwise.
Groundspeak headquarters is a pretty small facility, but I'm sure they're going to be busy.
Well, that you got that, and you got the Project Ape Cache and the original Stash Plat.
Right, and it's not too far from the oldest active cache. What's the name of that one?
Is it the Iron Horse Cache?
No, Mondo or something like that.
Iron Horse, I know, is the oldest one in Washington State. I want to say that it's GCD as its code. And it's up near the Ape Cache.
Definitely another one to hit then. But yeah, it's just like the heart of geocaching is right around the Seattle area. So definitely I think all of us are pretty much hoping to make it out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, you know, who knows? Maybe we can all get out there and, you know, form some big crew and go caching with, you know, a 20-car caravan or something. It'd be a little bit scary for the cops, I'm sure.
Maybe we can rent a bus, and we'll all just go out together.
Yeah, tour bus caching. I like that idea. All right, well, until next time.
Yeah, thanks all for joining us on our adventure. It's been fun taking you along with us, even if it was just virtually via audio. Thanks for joining us. And if you, you know, have any questions about how we did this, the cache, or, you know, anything we may have left out, feel free to give us, you know, shoot us an email or whatever, and we'd be glad to talk about it.
Yeah, voicemail line's always open. Just drop us a line.
206-3503-GPS.